Ladies and gentlemen, may I have your attention, please? Good evening.
You're listening to Straight Talk with Dean and Mark. We thank you for tuning in and hope you enjoy another exciting episode of our show.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Straight Talk with Dean and Mark. Seems like the last 3 weeks, man, have been real rough. Rest in peace to Gregory Jacobs, better known as Shock G from Digital Underground, and that makes three. So, you know, the past few months, man, have been real tough for the lovers of hip-hop and those who, you know, listen to the music, but peaceful journey to him. And we thank you what you've done for hip-hop. Now, in other news, you can't make this stuff up, man. A Capitol rioter argues that he called Nancy Pelosi a biatch, B-I-A-T-C-H, and not a bitch. Okay? The Capitol rioter who posed with his boot on House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's desk called the Congresswoman a biatch and not the far more offensive slur with one less letter, his lawyer argued in court papers. In an effort to frame Richard Barnett, 60, in the worst possible light and deny his bid for bail, federal prosecutors misquoted the note he'd left for Pelosi during the January 6th siege, argued defense attorney Joseph McBride in a motion filed Friday in D.C. federal court. "Hey, Nancy, Bigo, was there, biatch," reads the full message, with Barnett using his nickname, Bigo, instead of writing the accusatory "you bitch," as the government falsely states. "It only says biatch and without the word you," McBride explained in a footnote. On information to believe, the H or the D was meant to be two letters, C and H, with the C connected to an H to spell the word biatch, which is slang and less offensive word for bitch. In addition, his lawyers argued that Barnett's combination walking stick stun gun was not a dangerous weapon, as the government contends. While Barnett did show off the novel contraption, activating the shock function for a group of men at a bar January 5th, he had removed the batteries before storming the Capitol, making it nothing more than a collapsible walking stick, the papers say. Barnett of Arkansas allegedly breached the government building with hundreds of other President Donald Trump supporters, lounged in Pelosi's office, and snatched a piece of her mail, then later bragged to the media about it. "He removed that envelope because he bled on it and did not want to leave his blood in the speaker's office," wrote McBride, who added that Barnett turned over the unopened piece of mail to the FBI when he surrendered. Therefore, it cannot be said that he intentionally damaged federal property. The attorney accused the government of having a disdain for life in Arkansas. In late January, Chief Judge Beryl Howell ordered Barnett held without bail, calling him brazen, entitled, and dangerous, and questioned his intelligence after federal prosecutors argued that he's too dangerous to be free. The government pointed to incendiary language Barnett used on the day of the riot. "We the people. We own this motherfucker. This is our country. This is our district. You want to with us? Bring it on," he allegedly said. If convicted, Barnett faces up to 11 and a half years in prison. Now, sometimes people will make up the most interesting stories as to why they did something and why they didn't do something. If you honestly believe he took the batteries out of that walking stick / stun gun and whatever, yeah, sounds nice. But I don't believe that he did that. You know, I actually think this dude actually wants you to believe that he did something harmless but he didn't destroy government property. Now, you're right. You stole it. So I'm going to be following that one to see what happens with this case, because that's going to be an interesting one. But nevertheless, it's the six-man thing, Geronimo, and I'm in the studio from NJ to NC with my right-hand man, Mark Lee. So, Mark, tell me what's good in your neck of the woods, my brother.
Well, I'm just sitting here chilling, trying to see what's going on in the world. You know, did the radio show, had a voice lady that does voiceovers on the show, and then wound up on the Mullins doing an all-star show because, you know, I guess the weather's getting too nice, so folks don't want to be showing up for interviews no more, so they done disappeared and been trying to hide and stuff like that. So I had to do an all-star show, so I pulled an interview from Coco, who she had to push this last week of interviewing Shirley Murdoch, you know, the As We Lay lady. So
yeah,
I pulled off some of that interview and pulled off the interview that I did last week with the psychic, and we just went and had an all-star show, and then, you know, some comments that I made about news stories, the Oscars, and a number of other things. So, you know how we roll. We're going to make it happen. Even if we got to juggle some things, we're going to make it happen.
Oh, yeah. We definitely will, right? That's how it goes sometimes.
Yeah, like I said, I thought I had two or three lined up, but I was like, wait a minute, where are these people at? It was, like I said, I was pleasantly surprised because when I'm in there, I thought it was going to be all three shows were going to have to be ad hoc. But then the lady, there was the voiceover lady, she stuck around and actually stayed for the whole 2 hours because I popped into my StreamYard account, and there she was waiting for me, and we just had a good old conversation. She's over there in Ohio, has done a lot of work in that field, so we talked about that, talked about education, talked about COVID, talked about a lot of things. So, like I said, that was a pleasant surprise, but I was sitting there going like, before I went there, I was looking at my emails, and folks were like, it's a nice sunny day. I'm going to go out for a walk. I'm going to go out for this or that. So, like I said, people were being stubborn in the spring-like weather. So I might have to get some bribes going in order to get people to show up for us and everything along those lines. But, you know, we roll. We make things happen. And there's enough in the news going on and everything, because I just saw earlier today that they are finally going to do an investigation into Breonna Taylor. So they're going to do an investigation.
Wow.
You know, they'd already done that in Minnesota, but Merrick Garland came out today, you know, the Attorney General, and said that they are launching an investigation. So I'm actually going to pull that story up. But that one was a mind-blower in my mind. I don't know what you think, but, you know, I didn't know that justice would ever be served. But, yes, it definitely came out earlier today that they're going to do an entire investigation of the Louisville Police Department. So the entire Louisville Police Department is about to go under scrutiny. So it says the Justice Department will launch an investigation into the Louisville Metro Police Department to determine if there is a pattern of discrimination or excessive force within its ranks, Attorney General Merrick Garland announced today. So that was actually announced earlier today. The investigation marks the launch of the second such pattern or practice investigation since Garland took over as Attorney General, and comes more than a year after the fatal shooting of Breonna Taylor by Louisville, Kentucky police fueled worldwide protests against police violence and racial injustice. So Garland said the investigation will assess whether Louisville Metro Police Department engages in a pattern or practice of using unreasonable force, including with respect to people involved in peaceful, expressive activities. It will determine whether LMPD engages in unconstitutional stops, searches, and seizures, as well as whether the department unlawfully executes search warrants on private homes. So definitely that's going to be interesting. I heard somewhere that they may make it so that you can only, I want to say it's between 6 a.m. and 10 p.m., so they can only go and get you during those hours. If they don't get you before 10 p.m., they can't get you at all. That was something I think that came out in the gun law, because there's also the Supreme Court looks like it's going to be looking at gun legislation, and I will pull that up and talk to our listeners about that as well. But definitely, it looks like the folks are getting tired of some of this stuff, so they're actually looking into things. You know, the city did settle a wrongful death lawsuit with Taylor's family in September for $12 million. The settlement included a series of police reforms, Louisville had earlier also banned no-knock warrants. So the police department fired one of the officers involved in the killing last year because they said that their officer, Brett Hankinson, displayed an extreme indifference to the value of human life. So that, like I said, the Minnesota thing came, and now it looks like Louisville is going to be under the microscope as well.
I still have, I guess for me, you know, having gun legislation, for what? The criminals are not going, you know, unless it includes, like, very strict penalties for certain things, you're not saying anything exciting to me. Because what you're going to do is restrict the law-abiding citizens, and now it's going to restrict their right. Meanwhile, the criminals are getting all kinds of weapons and military-grade weapons and everything else. So you put the law-abiding citizens in jeopardy, you know? And it's just, to me, it sounds nice, but it's not nice, you know?
Understood. Well, apparently, this is what, you know, Monday was just been a busy news day because the Supreme Court announced Monday that it will consider the scope of the Second Amendment next term in a case concerning a New York law, so up there in your neck of the woods, that restricts an individual from carrying a concealed handgun in public. And I know that yesterday, Zach was doing his show, and he actually said that he saw somebody in a grocery store, a convenience store to be exact, was carrying a assault rifle. And apparently when people in the place were asking about it, he said that, you know, it was in his right to carry and everything. And I think he had a handgun in one, and he had the assault rifle with the clip in the car. Or at least he claimed the clip was in the car. I don't know if the clip was in the car or not. But he was sure enough going there in a convenience store. Now, what you're going in a convenience store with an assault rifle for is beyond me. I mean, you expected the potato chips to go jump out and assault you?
You know what? It's interesting to see, or to, you know, people do some weird stuff, man. So I don't know. Maybe he's gonna blow up the soda machine or something. You know, who knows, man?
Who knows?
It's just odd.
It is odd. But they said it's been more than a decade since the justices have ruled on a significant case concerning the right to bear arms, and the court's decision to take the case comes in the wake of several mass shootings in the U.S. and the Biden administration's push for enhanced gun regulations. The court move also highlights the impact of Justice Amy Coney Barrett's presence on the newly solidified conservative court. So Justice Clarence Thomas and others have been urging the justices to take up the issue. And just last term, the court declined several cases. So now that she's there, maybe they're going to go in a certain direction and everything. But in 2008, the court held for the first time that the Second Amendment protects an individual's right to keep and bear arms at home for self-defense. Except for a follow-up decision 2 years later, the justices have largely stayed away from the issue, infuriating gun rights advocates and even some of the justices themselves. Matter of fact, Thomas in 2018 said, if a lower court treated another right so cavalry, I'd have little doubt that this court would intervene. But as evidenced by our continued inaction in this area, the Second Amendment is a disfavored right in this court. So after the court effectively dismissed one case last term, Justice Brett Kavanaugh wrote that he hoped that the justices would vote to take up a new case soon. Still in June, perhaps with the knowledge that they were within five votes ready to decide, the court declined again to take up several new cases. So, but it's, apparently they're feeling empowered, those in conservative part of the court, and that's the majority. So definitely they're maybe looking at it, and I guess maybe they're going to try to find some things. But the case, the new case, New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Corlett, concerns a New York law governing a license to carry concealed handguns in public. It requires a resident to show he has what New York calls an actual and articulable need to do so. The Supreme Court decision in the case could have an impact on the millions of people living in jurisdictions with restrictive public carry licensing regimes, and will tell us how broadly the current sets of justices are reading the Second Amendment, according to a person here at Duke University School of Law. So definitely it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out and whether people will be able to carry more guns or less guns, because they said the petitioners in the case are Robert Nash, Brandon Koch, and the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, a group organized to defend the right of New York City residents to keep and bear arms. They are represented by Paul Clements, who served as the Solicitor General during the Bush administration. So they got some high-powered people in there and everything. So apparently Nash requested to carry a handgun for self-defense after a string of robberies in his neighborhood, but he was denied because he did not demonstrate a special need for self-defense. Koch wanted a similar license, and he was able to cite his experience of participating in safety training courses. He, too, was denied. And then they were adding that three states, California, Florida, and Illinois, and the District of Columbia generally prohibit people from openly carrying firearms in public. Two states, New York, and just down from me, South Carolina, prohibit openly carrying handguns, but not long guns. And another three states, Minnesota, Massachusetts, and your state prohibit openly carrying long guns, but not handguns. In the remaining states, people are generally allowed to carry firearms, though some states require a permit or license to do so. So have you been walking around with a handgun, and do you have any plans to do that in the near future?
I don't, because I don't need it. I mean, it also goes to, for some people, I think it's a level of fear. I don't know if they're just scared to be outside or just honestly afraid of everybody else, you know, but walking around with a gun, you know, that tells me you might not be who you think you are, you know what I mean? It's kind of weak to me, but for other people, they have their reasons, and the next thing you know, they're going to be carrying the weapons anyway. So what are you going to do? You know, the law says you can't text and drive. People still do it. The law says you can't drink and drive, and people still do it. So, you know, I mean, everybody doesn't, but there are many that still do it. So what are you going to do? What are you going to really do? Because then you don't want them to go to prison for a long time. You know, all that kind of craziness. So what are you going to do? That is just my question. What are you really going to do when they say, man, you know what? You can kiss my ass. I'm going to do what I want to do.
Go do what you want to do, how you want to do it, and all of that. You know, there's been some people that have been saying that Kamala has been very quiet and that nobody's been hearing her voice and everything. But then it came out today that apparently when it came down to the decision, or maybe it was yesterday, when it came down to the decision to leave Afghanistan, that she might have been one of the major voices. So apparently she said on Sunday that she was the last person in the room for President Biden when he made the decision to pull all U.S. troops out of Afghanistan. In an interview on CNN's State of the Union, Harris was asked about Biden's statement that he wanted the VP to be the last voice in the room, particularly when making big decisions like he was when he served as vice president under President Barack Obama. Harris confirmed that was the case regarding the move to withdraw troops from Afghanistan by September 11th, which is the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 terror attack. Man, we're getting old, because I remember that attack almost like it was yesterday, but it was actually 20 years ago and all of that. But this, Harris said, this is the president who has an extraordinary amount of courage, Harris said, regarding the decision, which was announced earlier this month. He is someone who I have seen over and over again make the decisions based on what he truly believes is the right thing to do. So Biden is acutely aware that it may not be politically popular or advantageous for him personally. It's really something to see. So apparently she was giving him credit for making this decision, but she was saying that she definitely was behind and supportive of that decision as well. But I know on Zach's show yesterday, he was talking about how he just felt like she has not been, that she was doing the silent act, which sometimes vice presidents do. So have you seen enough of Ms. Harris, or would you like to see more of her? Because I have heard some people, not just Zach, but others, have been like, yeah, she popped in for a, you know, one of those public appearances here and there, but we're not hearing enough of her. So I just wondering, what are your thoughts?
In most organizations, most deliberative assemblies and everything else, do you hear a lot from the vice president? Nah, you don't. So, you know, all of a sudden, I guess, people have a distorted view, like she's supposed to come in there and take over the whole place. She's not the president. She's the vice president. She acts in the president's behalf on certain things, and if he appoints her to do so. But other than that, man, when you're the vice president of an organization, it's almost like a chill spot. You get to, you know, you're dealing with the business that takes place, but, you know, you advise, you talk with the president about a lot of the stuff that's going on, and the president becomes like that voice piece. And, you know, I don't know what the expectation was. I guess they thought, you know, she was going to come in and all of a sudden it's going to be fight the power. We taking over. We doing this. We doing that. I don't know. But I know in most organizations, even if you go into retail, you look at a manager and the assistant manager, how much does the assistant manager really say? Not much.
Exactly.
The manager tells the assistant what to do. The assistant filters it down to the staff, and that's how it goes. So I'm quite sure the president will decide what he want to do. He runs it by the vice president. They may talk or whatever. If it's something for the staff to do, then the vice president becomes the messenger. Otherwise, it's the president making, you know, talking. So I don't know what they were looking for, but it's always something. Like, we expect magic to happen out of nowhere instead of using common sense. You know, first of all, let's just say something happened in our lifetime again that we figured we would never see. We've never thought in a million years that we would see a black man as the president of the United States. And then came Barack Obama.
Exactly.
We never thought in a billion years that we would see a black woman in any of those positions, and she's the vice president. So, you know, it's always something, no matter what. It's like we're never satisfied, but we never do anything to satisfy anything. You know,
we're never satisfied, and we always expect, like, the impossible. Because I do remember having friends in the activist community, consider myself part of the activist community. I do remember that a lot of folks expected Barack to come in and work like some magic, even though he's still got to play the game. It is a political game, and he's still got to play the game as well. And I think that I think he accomplished quite a bit, but they were expecting, you know, like, maybe he was going to come in and just, like, you know, we're going to paint the White House black, and we're going to have, like, discos and roller rinks in the White House or something like that. But they were, and I'm just being slightly sarcastic, but they were definitely expecting more than anybody should reasonably expect. And that's definitely something that I think we don't need to do. We need to understand that these folks are coming into a political environment, and they definitely, they can bend some of the rules, they can do some things, they can get some things accomplished. But I don't know any president, whether conservative, liberal, whatever, they got everything they wanted to do accomplished, because they've got to go up against the House, they got to go up against the Senate, they got to go up against the different lobbies that are going to go against some of the things they want to do. If you show me a president that has had 100% success rate, I want to meet that president, because I don't think that they've ever existed, because I'm sure that everybody, even the most notable presidents, the ones that get the history books and everything, I'm sure that George Washington had some things that he wanted to do that he did not get accomplished, and I'm definitely sure that both of the Roosevelts did, as well as the Kennedys and a number of others. I mean, definitely the Kennedys, because his brother was killed as Attorney General, but definitely they probably had all kinds of things that they wanted to do before they were assassinated. So we also have to be realistic in what we expect from our political leadership, and I would say that even on the local level.
You know what? That magic wand syndrome is a thing, isn't it? Like, you just want stuff to automatically, you know, overnight, it's going to be this. But see, that shows how little they understand also of this process, because you have a whole group of folks, almost, 600 deep, almost at least 535 people deep, that is called Congress. So they could pass a law, he could veto it, and they could say, you know what, we're not trying to hear what you're talking about. So we're going to override your veto, and it's going to become law. whether you like it or not, you know, and it's just amazing how, well, he should have known what black people needed. Yeah. But if your ass is hungry and you don't say that you're hungry, I'm not going to give you anything to eat. You know what I mean? Like the old folks used to say, closed mouths don't get fed. Yeah, I could know about all these issues, but if you know, like y'all claim about law enforcement, silence is accepted. Well, shit, y'all been silent about the ills in the community, so y'all have accepted it. What you want me to do? I'm not going out here like, hey, man, y'all want me to fix so-and-so? I'm not volunteering nothing. You don't bring it to me? Hey, man, I'm going to keep it moving, because guess what? You're the ones uncomfortable. And everybody wants, when it's something that they want, then it becomes, oh, you're not for black people. But then he got half of y'all bastards health care when y'all didn't have none. Because you're still dying and putting up GoFundMes on social media. So you won't get insurance. You won't go to the doctor. You claim the COVID-19 vaccine is an attempt to kill black folks. You know, all of this conspiracy stuff is just tiring, man. I've gotten to the point where it's like, you know what? There is no we. I move with people of like minds and everybody else, it is what it is. I mean, if you're not thinking on the same level I'm thinking, do you, I'm going to do me. And I'm going to keep it moving. Because you can't satisfy, everybody wants to be satisfied, but everyone has a different idea of what satisfaction is. You know? So, I don't have time to do that, man. I'm halfway through life, man. Fuck all the rest of that shit. And I say it like that because, you know, if you try to take time to please everybody, you're going to drive yourself nuts because it's something that's impossible. You will never be able to please everybody. Somebody's always going to be mad with something you do. But as long as you know who you are, what you're capable of doing, and satisfied with yourself, that's the main thing, man. That all that other stuff will drive some other people to suicide, because I ain't never killing myself, but, you know, I'm not self-medicating. I'm not, you know, going crazy and need counseling or none of that stuff because of what somebody else thinks. I don't care what you think. In fact, I don't care about you. You get hit by a car. You know, those are the people that get hit by a car right in front of me, and I'm like, let me go back in the store because this is none of my business.
Right. But then you got the people that literally, you know, and it still goes on in the year 2021, the folks that literally see the car crash and, you know, almost create another car crash because they got to sit there and rubberneck and look and see whether they know the person and be nosy about what
right.
happened. And sometimes it's just a minor fender bender. Hey, like, guys got nothing to do, but they causing all kinds of trouble because they want to sit there and rubberneck and see if they see something that's sensational that they can then go out and put on Facebook or Twitter, whatever the sources they want to announce about what they saw and everything of that nature. When a lot of times it ain't even, I mean, don't get me wrong, there are definitely serious accidents that happen on the highway, but then a lot of times some of that rubbernecking, it's nothing really going on and you just
right
to the drama.
Like, if you don't get your ass down the street, man, you got to start. You're causing another wreck trying to see it. It might be somebody I know. Well, why don't you pull over there? You know what I'm saying? Pull over and keep it moving. You know what I'm saying?
So just pull over and keep on moving. And like I said, if you see somebody, and I don't know, even because I've never figured out the logic of that. Even if it's somebody that you know, if they involved in a wreck, odds are the police are already there, and do they really want your interference at that time? They might want to be glad that you called them and check on them later on after the fact. You might call and be like, you know, I was driving down on my way home, and I saw that such and such was happening. But, you know, a lot of times law enforcement is involved, and I know for a fact law enforcement ain't trying to have Joe Blow stranger coming to the middle of something. It might have even been like an unlawful turn or something, and they really don't want you involved because you didn't see Jack. You come into the scene Johnny lately, so you didn't know what was going on or whatever, but you go sit there and you go add your 2 cents worth because it was your boy or your girl that was involved in this, and you're not helping anybody in the situation at all.
Nah, you know what? And just in the way, and then next thing you know, it's like, oh, what did I do? when the police get on you. Well, shit, you just caused a 12-car pile up. You know what I mean? Whatever. Yeah?
Well, I understand because I just got a text that we may have a guest. So I was reaching out to people, and I just got email.
Actually, we got somebody at the door right now. So let me check this right here and see who it is. All right, hold on 1 second. Welcome to Straight Talk with Dean and Mark. You are now on the line. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
Hi, my name's Amy Colette Soto. I'm calling from Simi Valley, California.
Well, we appreciate you calling us from California. I understand, as I was reaching out to you on LinkedIn, that you are involved with a masterclass elite group. So I would love to hear more about this masterclass elite group and what it's all about and whether anybody can join, because it sounds like a business coaching kind of business.
It's basically a consulting business, and we're a digital marketing business. My husband and I, it's called Masterclass Elite Group. I actually have him here on the line. He could tell you about it. We're live on, we're actually live.
Hello?
On a radio show right now. So what we want to tell you about Masterclass Elite Group is basically we're a digital movement that's taken force just recently, just throughout this year.
Yeah. So my name is Luis Soto, and I'm the CEO, and I literally just got off my last meeting, and my wife surprised me with this phone call. I'm, like, trying to get into this conversation, don't know really what's going on. But, yeah, in short, our platform is infrastructure. It's the digital cinema of, you know, the power of marketing, and we've been really successful at this platform thus far.
Well, one of the things that we talk about on the show regularly, and by the way, this is Straight Talk with Dean and Mark, and me, and I'm in North Carolina, Dean's in New Jersey, but we have a lot of entrepreneurs that call in regularly, and one of the things that we've been observing, and I'd love to hear y'all thoughts about this, is that in this age of COVID, we were actually just having general conversation about a lot of world issues before, but we also love having guests and everything, but one of the things we've noticed is that more and more people are getting into digital marketing. They're getting into gig jobs and things of that nature because for so long, so many of us were sitting at home trying to find out, you know, how we were going to do our jobs and things of that nature. And I do know that there was a movement of hybrid jobs, and a lot of people were getting into that gig economy as well because I've got friends that do DoorDash as well as Grubhub and also the car ones like Uber and Lyft. So I would imagine that y'all have probably seen a boost in business during this COVID era because a lot of folks are trying to find ways to maintain income and try to survive in these difficult times, even though the vaccinations do seem to be helping, and we seem to be moving in a positive direction. But I was just wondering y'all's thoughts in terms of have y'all seen an increase in business and more people wanting to get into this whole digital marketing space?
Absolutely. I think, you know, just a little bit about me. I was part of an industry of risk management. I was a risk manager for a national international enterprise in the restaurant and bakery world. And I got to learn so much about that industry. And my wife was also in the past 15 years in the medicine industry. Those two worlds were impacted tremendously as a result of COVID-19. Yeah. And a lot of these industries, medicine, technology, and risk management, heavily relied on, conference congregation. That was our foreground to really gain perspective of what was really going on with technology and, you know, commune with our community. That was taken away. So the only way, really, the only platform that we had was this digital platform. And to answer your question, yes, there has been an uptick in people wanting to collaborate with us so that we can brand their new business. Yeah, they could market and brand their mm-hmm. business through digital aid, which has always been the reliable source when it comes to, sharing people's stories and how they've succeeded with their business prototype.
And this is where we're headed, basically. It's virtual now. We're all going that route.
Yeah, so I think as a result of just what COVID-19 consumership has in fact changed, and you're going to see a lot of movement with cinematic, digital technology, film to kind of fill the gap of what is missing, because now there's no longer a place that we could have a congregate and have some community. So I think for the time being, at the very least, hopefully next year we'll see how things change. But for right now, I think there's going to be a revolutionary change, a pivot, if you will, with the importance of digital representation. And that's definitely going to happen and manifest before you know it.
And how are you seeing it deal with your old business of restaurants? Because I know for a long time we were hearing that restaurants in general were going to be very hit hard and are still being hit hard by the whole pandemic, and particularly minority restaurants. But I was just wondering, and this is actually Black Restaurant Week across the country and everything, but I was just wondering, in your conversations with restaurant owners and restaurant people in the restaurant industry, how has your work been impacting their work, and how have y'all been able to work together?
The restaurant industry, as many industries, have suffered catastrophic losses. A lot of people were already cash poor before COVID-19. Mm-hmm. COVID-19 came in. You know, a lot of the minority groups. I'm from, you know, I'm Hispanic. I'm Latino, and I consider myself part of that 18.5 minority group in the United States as we speak right now. Of that minority group, you know, half of them own their small businesses, and at that, you know. It was everybody working from month to month. They never had enough collateral to say, okay, I'll be good for the next 3-6 months. I think when COVID-19 hit, it handicapped potential growth. It really compromised, crippled their businesses. Yeah. So I think a lot of people had to really become creative and invent. And you know, a lot of the restaurants became a fully, delivery service to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, a lot of people with some invention within what they've done, they've also associated themselves with DoorDashes of the world to see how they can, survive. And everyone has really played that philosophy of survival of the fittest. And again, the restaurant industry will never be the same. Mm-hmm. It will never be the same. But at the same time, more than ever, there's been a lot of restaurants that have been resilient, and they have mitigated the risk. There's a lot of risk in the restaurant industry. That's why, you know, the risk management arena exists, is to mitigate that risk. There's a lot of people that sustain injuries in the workplace. And now imagine a restaurant that is cash poor now has to house 15 to 20 employees to make that restaurant flow. Well, there's a lot of risks associated with that, right? Now, with COVID-19 being, plausible in the workplace, and I can assert myself as an employee who works at the restaurant and say I caught COVID-19 in the workplace, that really puts the restaurant in a very compromising position. So now more than ever, risk management is going to be very fluid in a lot of the entrepreneurs in the world of what they do, to see how they can mitigate their risk so that they won't, you know, end up bankrupt one day.
Yeah, and one of the other things that we've been seeing is just yesterday was the Oscars, and of course we know that the movie industry, and y'all are in California, has also been impacted as well, and a lot of that has gone more digital. So I was wondering if y'all could talk, if you know anything about that as well, because I have seen it definitely more things going straight to direct to the house, and less people going to the movie houses. Actually, I'm on the board of one of our local theaters here in Durham, North Carolina, and I know that for a long time we've not been doing live events. We've been doing virtual events, and as I'm hearing what Disney Plus and HBO Max and a number of others are doing in terms of going directly to the customers, because the customers are sitting at home, and a lot of times people want to be in that more comfortable home environment. But I was just wondering, in y'all space, have you been seeing more of that, and have y'all been working with those movie makers and movie agencies?
We have had the opportunity in the space that we're in to work with all different walks of life.
Mm-hmm.
In the industries of restaurant, bakeries, any type of entrepreneurship, small and big, 500 employees, 10,000, up to 10,000 employees, depending on just what type of organization, type of discipline that they serve. From that inventory, we've also supported some of the Hollywood studios, and we've seen that just like any other industry, their business was put at a halt. In fact, Hollywood was suffered tremendously from the beginning of time, because they were filming one day and then the next day they couldn't film anymore. So Hollywood has suffered tremendously in that you know, they led a lot of made a lot of their they made a lot of their profit margins through, you know, the associations and business affiliations that they had with the AMCs and the Edward, you know, theaters of the world. So they had to heavily rely on technology and resources that we have readily available, and one of the movements is, you know, streaming. And this is where the Apples of the world and all these other, you know, digital services, HBO Max, Hulu.
They're selling a lot of things
HBO Max. Exactly. So there's a lot of these affiliations that have had to offset the losses by really making business arrangements with these associations.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, we also saw the Oscars last night, and there was, in fact, we saw, like you said, a tremendous effort in the promotion of let's get back to Hollywood times and let's get back to the theaters, and they really did a phenomenal marketing job with, you know, getting back into the scheme of, hey, you know what, throughout the year of 2020, cinema got us through, it was very therapeutic.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have to make films and, you know, reach beyond what we've reached in terms of successes with special effects, and let's get our people back into the theaters so that we can really make this business back how it was and, you know, attain the lucrative benefits that it did at one point.
Yeah, because one of the things that I was really impressed with, and not everybody was how they were using it to address issues of concern that people have, not just about COVID, but also around social justice issues, because a number of the movies were dealing with that, whether it was Nomadland or whether it was Ma Rainey's Black Bottom or a number of the other movies as well. So I do know that definitely there's been a lot of people paying attention to Black Lives Matter, but also to the Latin American community, particularly that out of the West Coast and the Southwest, and to now our Asian brothers and sisters as well. So I was wondering, even in your own work, have you been reaching out into some of the minority communities, trying to get them involved in your business as well? And also, did you see some of those same observations there in the West Coast?
Yes, I have. Yes, in fact, I've been a Latino. I've been here in California, married, you know, with my wife for over 20 years. I've been here since I was 3 years old, and I have never seen a diverse, inclusive, you know, movement of artistry with no, you know, shame or guilt, but conviction, and I'm here to stay, and I'm going to do my thing. And a lot of these people in the art world have been very entrepreneurial in that they have attained their successes by starting their own businesses, by starting their own film productions, by starting their own digital firms. And, you know, if I can't get someone to believe in me or produce my theme or my concept, then I'm just going to do it myself. So there's a lot of that happening, and a lot of that surge came from the minority group because there was just not enough opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
So now I forget the director of the Black Panther. I forget his name. He's an African American. Oh my gosh, I have to. He's the tip of my tongue. I don't know. Do you know what I'm talking about? The director that directed Black Panther.
I'm trying to remember exactly who that is. I love that movie, so I'll look that up because that's what we can do here.
Oh, it's gonna come back to me anyhow. But what he's doing, he's been very successful at, you know, producing, directing, becoming, you know, very well known in the industry because of what he does. But now that he's attained so much success, what he's doing is he's now providing opportunity for young aspiring directors and producers to generate their own films with the financial backings of what he could do. So again, like the Tyler Perry's of the world, you know, he has created a huge institution where now he's, you know, he's housing a bunch of people to support, to film, you know, all his projects in the Fit Studio. I mean, there's just a lot of movement that I've seen, and I'm very proud of it, to tell you the truth, because I see,
yeah,
I see now more than ever, we're going to see a lot of it.
Yeah, Ryan Coogler, that was the name of the director that we were trying to remember,
yeah,
and everything.
Yeah.
So Ryan Coogler is that particular gentleman and everything. Now, one of the things, I'm actually one of those folks that's older gentleman that's in the late 50s and still in that single space and everything, but my partner in crime, Dean Geronimo, he and his wife are very much involved in that business space and do a lot of business together, but also support each other as well. And I'm sure that Dean may want to jump in and tell you a little bit about what him and Dr. April do and everything. But if you could, I'd love to hear your thoughts about working together in that space as husband and wife? Because, like I said, y'all sound like y'all have been doing this for a while. I know that Dean, even though he's involved in workforce in the correction system, he has also been very much involved with a number of things in his with his wife and some of the things that they do together, because he also does some groundwork for one of our local guys that does is a internationally known hip-hop artist, that being Ninth Wonder, and he does a lot with his street team and all of that. But I would love to hear your thoughts about working together in that husband and wife entrepreneurial space.
Well, you know, I think, you know, MasterClass League Group is a compilation of 15 years of my career as a risk manager, 15 years of my wife being in the medicine world, but also prior to that, we were in the we kind of played a little bit in the entertainment world. My wife was a working actress for many years until she decided to go on a hiatus and start our family. And then with COVID-19, a lot of things shifted and changed, and we then decided to do our own thing, of which we decided to use all of our network, everything that we had. We worked so hard for. My wife opened up her Rolodex and started calling her producer friends, actor friends, director friends, manager, her manager, and whatnot, to kind of see what the entertainment is right now and what we could do to contribute, given that COVID-19 has handicapped the whole industry. My wife, you know, has really used some of her acting. What have you?
Right, and then we ended up getting our kids now have agents. We got a commercial. The whole family did, which was funny. But no, the industry itself, we've been able to definitely use and been able to definitely help our business grow with any of the people that I've known in the past. But I mean, basically, working as a couple has its trials, has its benefits, because you're a team. You're fighting for each other, and you have one main goal, and you know you can pretty much trust each other. So that's helpful. But of course, you do get on each other's nerves. Let's just say that. But it's a when you're a power couple, it's a win-win. I mean, it's a huge taking, but it's what we do. It's what we've always done.
And I think right now, whether you're a couple or your husband and wife or your brother and brother, sister and sister, any type of affiliation as a family. I mean, I've met so many entrepreneurs that started their companies within their family, you know, wall. And everyone has their strengths. And I think right now what our challenge is as entrepreneurs trying to really leverage and use this digital power, right, this power of cinema to kind of convey a message of what our awareness of what our reality is right now, and have used our platform to speak on behalf of what's going on in the community and the world without polarizing it, without being political about it. Everyone is so sensitive right now with, about vaccinations, you talk about black or white, you talk about privilege, you talk about, you know, Black Lives Matter, you talk about that, you know, just everything right now is so imperative to make awareness of, but it's the art of how you're going to do it without being abrasive, without being invasive, without being offensive to your viewer. And that is the challenge in the digital world, I think, that we find is how can we give a objective perspective? How can we educate our viewer by giving them the facts, but not really offend or encroach our belief systems into theirs, right? So I think that for us has been a learning lesson for both of us.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. What do you think is one of the number one lessons that you would like more entrepreneurs to know? Because, like I said, with this whole COVID era, we've seen more and more people that have gone into entrepreneurship. I know you used the word earlier, pivot, and that's become like the catchword for just about everybody these days. It seems like everybody is pivoting in one way or another, either from their jobs into gig jobs or from their jobs into new jobs and a number of other things as well. But as we're getting more and more entrepreneurs, what is some of the pitfalls that you would like to see more people stay away from?
I think that, you know, I live to trial and error, and my wife and I, I think MasterClass League Group is a byproduct of we've always wanted to be an entrepreneur. We always wanted to work for ourselves. We always wanted to be independent financially. we were not 9-to-5 people, but we had just grown accustomed to that model. Mm-hmm. And then when, you know, you have kids and you have a mortgage and you have a car note, then you become victim of, now I have a good job with benefits and, you know, I get a regular paycheck and I don't have to worry and I, you know, maintain. And but in the exchange of not of literally giving your freedom, of becoming someone else's, you know, employee, and therefore you have no room to grow as an entrepreneur. I think COVID-19 provided the opportunity for my wife and I to be unemployed as a result of COVID-19, and to use that opportunity to say, okay, this is the time where we either go big or we go home. Right, because this is the opportunity what we've been talking about, and I think it's just that courage to say, you know, let's have a plan, let's stop talking about it, stop thinking about it, let's really acclimate ourselves, let's have a one-year goal, let's see how we can save enough money to really launch, you know, your company, you know, making it an LLC, making it a full-fledged website, and becoming very, you know, in tune with what you're doing with your concept, because just like you, everyone else is doing it. And it's not a matter of you not opening your business. It's that how unique is it? What do you have to offer that is different from the rest, that is just not the same? And I think the having that original spirit of how can I be original? How can I give something that I know out there is not something that can be duplicated? But at the same time, how can I also make an impact? How can I use my platform in a way where I'm representing, you know, a topic or a community or a purpose? I think that if you don't have those, if you have a platform where you get to have a following of 10 to 20,000 people, you need to make sure to have that, you know, due diligence and responsibility to know that you have now an impression to make, whatever that is. And this is where if you start kind of getting more followers, especially in the industry that we're in, you become more aware of, okay, we're gaining the following. We're gaining a lot of fan base. How can we excel? How can we continue to grow? How can we be better from the last and not go complacent? I think there's a lot of people right now that at some point say, oh, I've worked my butt off and now I'm complacent, and they have fallen victim and have had to close their businesses down because now there's a surge of entrepreneurship. I think COVID-19, what it really did is, there's a lot of people that said, I'm not happy here with what I'm doing in my life, working my 9-to-5, or I feel like I have not fulfilled my purpose. I haven't done anything that I want to do. And they've taken a leap of faith. A lot of people have taken a leap of faith. And there's the entrepreneurship movement is soaring right now. It's soaring right now. And not unlike anything I've ever seen in my life. And, you know, Chicago Tribune, New York Times, they have all these articles written about it, of the statistics of these people, you know, going rogue.
Yeah, definitely seeing more and more people going rogue. One of the things that we've been seeing, even in the digital media space, is more and more digital media popping up. I know that not just the podcast, because there are thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of those, but there are now also a few, not a lot, but a few digital television networks and things of that nature. Of course, there's the big boys like Disney Plus, but there are also independents. And one of the things that I'm noticing with the independents is that a lot of times they don't know how to market that independent product. So they may have a lot of great products, maybe everything from talk shows to dramas to a number of other things, but then they're trying to do it using the standard forms of getting out there. And I know that StreamYard is a popular platform, and then they will tie you to Facebook and YouTube and Twitter and Twitch and things of that nature. But not everybody knows how to use those kind of platforms and actually get statistics. One of the things that I've always been regretting is that I have yet to see, either for podcasting or streaming podcast platforms, a true Nielsen's rating. So you really don't get a sense of who you're reaching totally. So I was just wondering if that's something that your company has been researching, and if so, are y'all finding a way to get actual analytics? Because like I said, you can get analytics from Facebook, you can get analytics from YouTube, but a lot of those analytics can be screwed yeah, in the wrong way and things of that nature. So I was just wondering your thoughts about that, because like I said, I know that a lot of times I have friends that are doing all kinds of shows. I've got a friend that's a LinkedIn influencer, and he does really well with his program and everything, which is his Voice Your Vibes, as well as Shout Out Saturdays. But, you know, I'm not even sure that he knows necessarily how many people he's reaching. I would guess thousands based on the amount of people that come into the room and talk to him on Wednesdays and Saturdays when he's doing this. But I have still not seen anybody with true analytics that actually are effective.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and I think I'm a risk manager at heart. We heavily rely on data to help us understand the story of what needs fixing and what is in good standing. Mm-hmm. So, as an entrepreneurs that we are, we need to make sure that the investment that we're making in this company, there is a return on investment somehow. How can we attain quantifiable metrics to understand that if we're growing exponentially, or if we're not, or if we're flatlining, what does that metric look like? And I think because of COVID-19, social media was always running rampant, and it was a very powerful resource to really market your brand. But because now COVID-19, LinkedIn has not, what it meant, was meant for, has become something now more. Now I think LinkedIn has become now a foreground of like survival. Like, people are using that for everything. It was supposed to be professional and find your network. Now people are pitching, they're doing everything that they can about their business, and they're engaging in questions and answers, and they're bringing in, educational webinars in there. So LinkedIn, has really morphed into something more. And LinkedIn, as we start kind of bringing, sending all of our trailers and videos that we are, submitting, we're seeing our viewership increase on LinkedIn. We're seeing our YouTube viewership increase on YouTube. Mm-hmm. We're seeing a exponential number of people responding and DMing us and sending emails, giving us feedback, trying to collaborate with us. We're seeing that, when we sent out a trailer this time last year, it took us about 300 views to collect in 3 months. Now we're collecting 300 views in 3 days. So again, there's certain things that you can, grasp and kind of understand. And then, of course, our type of service is that we are a digital infrastructure. We are an educational publication, but another feature is we just opened up it's called a Make Film Productions, which we're going to be producing digital, campaigns for companies, big and small, that cannot afford a big Coca-Cola commercial or a big Walmart commercial, that we can still endorse their, by way of commercial campaign or digital branding, to get their name and their story out to the community. Mm-hmm. So, we were very centric in servicing our communities, but because of falling into the need of how do we promote it, we've become this digital institution which has served us justice in the end of the day.
Yes. It sounds like it has definitely served y'all a lot of justice and everything. For those that are listening that want to know a little bit about both of your backgrounds, I'm sure that they would love to know individually what the background was. And like I said, I know you mentioned that you had done restaurants and your wife had done acting. So I guess I'll start with the wife first and then come to you. But if you share just a little bit about your background, Ms. Soto, and everything, just in terms of how you got involved in the acting community and what led you into getting out of that and everything. So I'd love for you to give our audience a little bit about your background as well.
Yeah, I was born and raised out here in Los Angeles, California. So I sing, I dance, and it was just always a desire of mine to I just performed from a very early age. And so right out of high school, I went into like acting classes and just was like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to hit the pavement. And so I did. And I started working. I was hitting the pavement going to Fox and, Disney and going to Sony and auditioning for all types of things. And doing off-Broadway shows and worked on the biggest of the things that I've done was on The Tonight Show. I worked with Jay Leno and doing some of the sketch comedy and I worked on the Jenny McCarthy Show doing some of the sketch comedy when she was on MTV. And lots of different TV shows. And then I think what happened is, you know, it just, it's a lot of work, and you get to a certain place where you're like, okay, I need to, you have to give your everything. And I wanted to also have babies and, you know, have a life as well. And it was kind of like, to manage the two was tough for a little bit. And so I took a little time off. And then when I did that hiatus, it just, it basically, I've always continued doing my singing, or like people will call and say, hey, can you sing at this event or, and so I'll still do those types of things and, intermittent work here and there from people that I've worked with in the past. But, for the most part, I just basically stopped. And, and then right when COVID hit, my manager just said, hey, send me a picture of the entire family. And I was like, okay. So I didn't know what she was doing. So she sent it over to Osbrink Agency. Osbrink Agency was like, oh my gosh, these kids are darling. I have to see these kids on tape. And do they speak Spanish and English? And they do. And so it's a, you know, it's a biracial family. I'm white, you know, as white as can be, blonde, green eyes. And so the kids are these mixed kids. And so the agency was just like, oh my gosh, we have to see these kids on tape. Immediately signed them doing commercial and print. And then they ended up signing us as well, the parents. And the reason why is because COVID, they don't want to cross-contaminate as often. And so basically they're not casting, say, the mom or the dad. They're basically trying to hone in the cross-contamination with COVID, and they're casting families, and they're casting, like, cousins, the people that have all kind of been together in isolation. So one of our first audition we went on, we booked. And so we've been nonstop auditioning. Our kids are auditioning. So now it's kind of led into Momager / a masterclass a week group. And I'm going back into acting and doing all kinds of things. So it's just like opened a whole new avenue. And so lots of blessings this year. It's been really amazing, actually.
And I think, you know, how we've leveraged, we've been very you know, I think, you know, my mom and my dad, you know, as Amy's parents, they're entrepreneurs themselves. My father-in-law was a veterinarian. He invented his own animal product. My dad was an engineer, and he had his own auto business. And so they always instilled in us, whatever you do in life, leverage it and take it and do with what you have and build something with it. And that's what we did. And, you know, my career, Amy's career with her acting and her, and then, you know, when she was on hiatus, she started working in the medicine field. And then me working in the risk management arena for 15 years, we knew that we had to make this master custody group palpable, make sense of what we did all this time with our career, and how can we make this a full-fledged concept that works. Because it's in the digital arena, and, you know, one of the things that is very important is not only to brand the concept and the platform and our content, but we also need to brand ourselves, because we are the face of the Masterclass Elite Group branding. So Amy and I have been very good at, again, promoting ourselves as individuals, but still a husband and wife, and also celebrate our differences. We've been having very much success with one of the last trailers that we sent out, where we talk about diversity and inclusion in the workplace, and we're using our personal stories to, again, bring awareness to the community.
Yeah, because that's one of the things that I noticed that people have been talking about even before COVID, but definitely since COVID, is the fact that we need to have more diverse gatekeepers. And it sounds like maybe part of what your platform is doing is creating an avenue for that to happen, because I know that that's been a complaint, not just in the African-American community, but also the Latin American community, the Asian community, and a number of other minority communities as well, is that there hasn't been enough gatekeepers that were not Anglo in terms of their ethnicity and things of that nature. So I was wondering, is that something that y'all are intentionally trying to do, is to make sure that the gatekeeping aspect is very diverse, and that the clients that y'all are servicing are diverse as well.
Absolutely. You know, MasterCrest Elite Group is very deliberate from the beginning, from its inceptions. And my wife and I sat down and said, how can we do something that has never been done before? How can we make it bulletproof? How can we make it original? How can we make it memorable? How can we make it human? How can we reach our viewers and touch their spirit, their soul? We're going through catastrophic events. How can we really do this? And the only way to do it is, again, to heavily rely on the art form and our aesthetic that we want to do. We've been very successful at the aesthetics of MasterCrest Elite Group. It's centered in art and classical music, and we make that the focal point of our you know, we're conveying a digital message, and it steers away from any type of business pitch that you see in a business setting or a boring, you know, manual training of any sort where there's no story, there's no beginning, middle, or end. It's just the pitching of a business. And I think what we're trying to do here is we're trying to congregate all of our people in our industry, mm-hmm. and we want our platform to be a safe platform where people can speak of their differences within their community, bring in inventions, highlight their successes, use it as a platform to celebrate diversity and, you know, each person's success through their career journey, and, again, be a force to be reckoned with in the next couple of years.
It sounds like it. And are y'all also using it to break stereotypes? Because I know a lot of people have been paying attention to south of the border, and definitely, you know, that we've been seeing the images of the kids coming across the border. But a lot of times people are not paying attention to the reason that the kids are coming across the border. But there's also people that are wanting to paint, like, say, Mexico as being entirely drug overridden, even though there are parts of Mexico.
Exactly.
That is a problem, but it's not all of Mexico, even though if you hear some people, you would have them think that all of Mexico is being run by the cartel. So are y'all intentionally trying to break some of the stereotypes that exist? And I'm just using Latin American examples, but I mean the same could be said of the Asian American population, because a lot of people have stereotypes about, say, Indians from India, as well as Chinese, particularly with COVID and everything of that nature. So just wondering, are y'all using it as a means to break some of these stereotypes that unfortunately are too ingrained in society?
Absolutely. I think, me sharing my story to my community and talking about my being an immigrant at the age of 3 and coming to the States with my parents and sharing my story and then bringing in some educational awareness of the Hispanic, you know, statistics and what things are looking like in the next 5 years and, you know, what is to be expected in a diversity and inclusion, you know, corporate world and what does that look like. That was a step towards, you know, again, touching subject matter that is sensitive. But I think what's been very successful for us is that because we have not, you know, given reason for anyone to think that we're Republican or Democrat or Christian or whatever, we are very, again, very objective in that we don't encroach our belief systems, but we want to just be an institution where we're just educating facts. And we're letting our viewer make their own conclusions. But again, our job is to create awareness. And yes, I want to, you know, create awareness. We want to use this platform to elevate women. You know, my wife is a very powerful entrepreneur. She wants to use this platform to elevate women from all different walks of life who have created an amazing empire and are, you know, independent because of it. And I want to highlight and talk about immigration in a way where it's acceptable to, again, through education, by way of education and by way of sharing stories. That's the way that you get away with it. If you start saying, this is how I feel, I think that that's not going to go well. But if you share a story and say, this is my truth,
right,
and I'm going to just share that, and I'm going to create some perspective. I think that's how you go about it, and that's what we've been very successful. We've been very successful with that. So the goal is to bring a level of awareness against by stressing some facts about the Asian, you know, deficits that have occurred, all the violence that has happened to the Asian community. It's absolutely overwhelming to even understand that this is what's going on. I've never seen our world in this way. So I think there has to be, you know, we have to create other platforms to offset that situation.
But that's what we're showing people that are different in skin and different in culture, and we're coming together. And that's what people need to see, is that there's no barrier between the two of us. We're the same. We do have the same blood running under our veins. So people do need to break these barriers and these thoughts in their minds. It's a definite process, but that's what we stand for is the blended family for sure.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like it. Yeah. And definitely it also sounds like, to some degree, Mr. Soto, that you almost sound as if you would be almost like an original member of what the Dreamers have gone through, even though you're older than the Dreamer generation is. But definitely sounds like you, like many of the Dreamers, came across at a young age, because I know a lot of the Dreamers, that's part of what they're trying to do is make sure that they are getting the rights that they've had, because they've lived here in the United States for, say, 20 or 30 years and came across with their parents when they were youngsters, and maybe the parents were in their 20s or 30s at the time. So it sounds to me like you can definitely relate to what the Dreamers have gone through and probably have some thoughts about that as well.
Yes.
Yes, you know, I think that, I mean, I've never seen it. I always talk to Amy about just the woman independence and how there's just so many other women out there that are, you know, soaring, and I've never seen so much woman power. And my name is like, and I'm going to be one of the leaders to engage so that we could really make this happen, because it's about time, you know? So we always talk about, again, how we could really use our platform for good. I think that the minute that, you know, we don't use it for good, we sold our soul to the devil. We have to always make it inspirational. We always have to leave an impression.
Well, during this year, it with COVID, I think the main goal was to really generate hope, was to really show that we're here to support and bring our expertise to the forefront so that we could help support the people who were losing their jobs, who needed guidance. And with what we have learned over the accumulation of our life, we've been able to do that. And so we've been able to do it in an artistic way now. And so this is an avenue that is a huge embarkment, but we're doing it, and people are needing this because they don't have creativity, really. Not a lot of people do, and so they want to get a message across, but you have to do it creatively, you have to do it objectively, you have to be able to get your message across, but, like, impact people at the same time and get them to stay locked in. And so there's something great about our work where people get they're captivated. It almost seems like a movie trailer, but yet you're educated at the same time. So it's really it's an eclectic way, but people are really jumping on, and they're using it for their company.
They're digging it. So, you know, we're
going to
take it down to Chinatown.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like they're doing a real good job and definitely getting the word out and everything. I know one of the things that we've talked about, not just on this show, but a number of other podcasts that I'm involved with, including some streaming ones, is the importance of education. And it definitely sounds like you're trying to get your kids involved in education. But I know that one of my friends who's involved in the media, as well as engineering and the legal field, the two of them oftentimes talk about the fact that they feel that we are using 18th century methods in the 21st century. So they feel that we need to do better with education. And I know that even earlier today I was talking to a lady out of Canada that does voice work and does voiceovers, and she was talking about how back in the day we did a lot of work through repetition, and that's how we remembered things, whether it was the Bill of Rights or the Constitution, and we seem to have gotten away from that as well. So just wondering your thoughts about education, as you do have, it sounds like, school-age kids and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And are you happy with the education system, or would you like to see it improved in the 21st century? So I'd love to hear your thoughts about where we are education-wise.
You know, it's funny. We no longer do memorization is something of the past for these kids. It's not good because these phones and the technology has really taken away the skill of what we went through. We used to have to literally memorize things all the time. And even with phone numbers, say like you lift up your phone and you had to know your mom and dad's phone number by heart. They don't have to do that now. And so it's as simple as just that. And that is a skill that is basically lost. Also, writing is also being lost, and cursive. And so math has changed. I don't even know what to say about the math. I mean, the parents have to basically take classes to learn the format of what they teach, this core mathematics. It's hilarious. So, I mean, there's so many things that have changed, and the generation that's coming up, I mean, it's a completely different generation, and their minds are working differently. Even some of the teachers, the math teachers, like say the junior high teachers, the English teachers, they say that the students literally cannot retain the same amount of information for a long amount of time. Like there are things that are definitely affected because of technology. But then again, you have everything at their fingertips. And so they're much more exposed to just the knowledge. And so, my people perish for lack of knowledge. Luckily, we won't perish. They won't perish. They'll have a lot more information at their fingertips. But at the same time, they need to be grounded. Kids are not as grounded. And with COVID now, and they only have 2 hours at school, and they're at home, it's been really tough. It's been really tough to keep them locked into studying, wanting to stay motivated to learning. During this year, the parents are basically having to be teachers, which is one of the most frustrating things because that's not something that we're good at, but nor do we have the time for it necessarily because we're trying to do other things. So I don't know how parents are doing it, but yeah, I think our education, we have a lot to do, a lot more now with COVID and what's gone on and the year that's been lost. Pretty much. I think a year's been lost.
Yep, I definitely would agree. A year's been lost, maybe even a year and a half or close to two
years.
So definitely we lost pretty much all of the majority of last year, and we've lost quite a bit of this year. I know vaccinations are going well throughout the country, so hopefully that means that we'll see more activities going on in the traditional sense. But I'm actually thinking that we're going to be in the next several years in this hybrid model, which will be a mix of maybe some live performances, but also digital kind of stuff. Because I know, like I said, I did a film festival, and even next year when the film festival may go back to being live for the first time in 3 years, there will be a digital component. So I think there will be a digital component to a number of things. I would even imagine we'll see that with sports activities as well, because I don't know when we're ever going to get back to full capacity, but I was just wondering what your thoughts are and what you're hearing from the industry.
School and how it's basically going to go back. I think by next year it'll go back. I mean, it's all dependent upon COVID and the lifting of the colors and what color bracket they're in. And so basically it's gotten better already. But I think by the time it starts next year, like the new school year, I think they're going to be back at school. But it will probably be a little, just not as intense, like all day at school, but probably a little less, I would say. And then they have to clean up and do all that. But I don't know. It's going to be integrated, I think, by next year because things are opening up now with COVID because everybody's getting vaccinated and now people are starting to feel more comfortable, I guess, because the vaccinations are coming out. So,
yeah, definitely. What did you feel, Ms. Soto, when you saw Kamala? We were talking about Kamala before you got on the line earlier when she became vice president. Did you see that as a victory for women? And is that something that you were enthusiastic about or that you have used to motivate other women entrepreneurs and other women of power?
I mean, I think for women in general, it was a huge accomplishment just to see a woman become vice president. And we hadn't seen that happen in America. And that is a huge, just a step forward for all of us. And I saw the little girls, you know, like watching television, or like the little girls that it would just impact, and watching their eyes just light up looking at the television at the fact that a woman was becoming vice president, and an ethnic woman at that, for that matter. It was one of the greatest moments for American history. Truly, it really was. And for all the little girls in America to see that, I think it was a victory, and it was empowering, and it was tear-jerking for sure to see the little girls and the hope in their eyes of what they could be and the dreams that they now have because they saw that happen, you know.
No, I definitely agree with you on that. That was definitely a powerful dream. Now, for folks that are interested in learning more about this elite group and everything, what kind of services are y'all currently offering, and what is the best way for folks to get the website, and what kind of thing should they be looking at bringing to your table and everything? Because, like I said, y'all are a power couple there in L.A., so you might have some specific projects that y'all are looking for. So what should people be trying to pitch to you, and where would they pitch it to? So, like, the website and the email and ways that they can reach you.
Well, so we've opened up a website where it just kind of shows anybody who wants to know what we're trying to do, some of our, you know, inventory of digital services that we've done for the community. There's going to be they could have access to all the information by going on www.masterclasseliteGroup.com. But we're both also on LinkedIn, and we have a following, and, you know, we advise anyone who would want to collaborate with us in the future to kind of go into our YouTube channel, look at all of our inventory, look at all the things that we're doing, and subscribe and follow. You know, again, we've been in business for a year, and we've really touched a lot of people, but we, you know, are resilient type of folk, and we want to give it our all. We want to take it to the next level this year. How we plan to do it is by really now running campaigns for people, for the dreamers out there that want, you know, to have an amazing invention, or that they've done something with themselves in terms of a business prototype toward the world of risk and medicine. And, you know, we've done a huge launching campaign endorsing just that, where if you have any type of invention that you would like to share in the community, why not use our platform so that we can really now engage with you and highlight that invention. We launched it about 4 months ago, and we've become very successful in that campaign. From that, there's been a lot of prospects that we've had to now put into a project calendar and get, like, you know, weeks blocked so that you can start working and collaborating on their projects. And we've been very successful with that. So I think more than anything, we've been very inclusive. Anybody, again, who wants to contribute a way of education, or I have, you know, something to share, it may not be an invention, but it may be, you know, some tidbits or tips on resolving cases, or what is Corona going to do to the world of insurance, or what is it going to do to the world of workers' comp? How, you know, so again, so we're welcoming everyone. There's never we don't want to work with you kind of deal. It's more or less of how can we build your platform into a way where it's consumable for the consumer, for them to understand what you do, and hopefully you could use our platform to, again, create a level of awareness in what you do in terms of expertise or knowledge power. Of course, in that transaction, because we have to do the platform has to be sustainable. There is a fee associated with that, but again, it's all dependent on the type of project it is, how long it is, 30 minutes versus 1 minute. But again, 30 seconds versus 1 minute and 30 seconds. I mean, the amount of bags and tricks that you want on your reel. Do you want, you know, special effects? Do you want, you know, orchestra music? Do you want editorial, you know, features? Again, there's so many things that we are doing and we're playing around with in terms of just the artistry of film. and we're now really compiling that and putting this into this digital platform. I'm really happy to hear that we could definitely, it's
www.masterclasselitegroup.com and subscribe to our YouTube channel at masterclasselitegroup.com or masterclass.
Yeah,
and
that's on YouTube as well. We definitely want to do that and definitely want more people to do that. Is there an opportunity for people that, like I said, on one of my earlier shows, I had somebody that was in the voiceover space, and, of course, right here at Durham, where North Carolina Central and Duke is, there's a number of folks that are in the music space as well as the acting space. So if folks are listening that are in that space, are there opportunities for them to work with y'all as talent as well? So is there any opportunities for talent to reach out to you and to serve as the voices or the skill set that will be on these promotional reels, and would they reach out to you at that same email or subscribe at the same place?
That would be a different situation, because that would be the LinkedIn information. I would suggest they go on LinkedIn, and we have our email information available. It's lsoto at masterclasselitegroup.com, and my wife is asoto at masterclasselitegroup.com, and those are special inquiries of how you can collaborate with the production process. And yes, we never say no to anything. At this point, I've used Tyler Perry as a reference guide, and that man has multi layers within his business and his empire, and look at him now. So at this point, we're going his direction. That's it. That's all.
No, that sounds like a great motivation to go after Tyler Perry's direction. I've not always been the biggest Tyler Perry fan, just because of some of the ways that his portrayal of women and some of the church people, but I do know that he is, as an entrepreneur, a force to be reckoned with, and I will give him credit for the speech that he gave during the Oscars, where he was asking everybody to meet him in the middle, and that he didn't have any place in his heart for hatred of anybody, be that for racial reasons, ethnicity or orientation, or even the police force as well, because he actually gave a shout out to the police as well, and he was just telling everybody to stand up against hatred and to meet him in the middle, where he feels that there is more room for growth and opportunities for us all to work together in that middle ground. So I will give him credit for that statement that he made there, as well as some of the statements that Regina King and others made at the Oscars. So while I was watching the Oscars, I was listening to some of their remarks, and I thought that was a very powerful remark that he made.
Those actors, Regina King, that's another actress. You know, I remember her back in Boys to Men. Boys in the Hood. And I mean, who would have thought that she would have now made it the way that she did? I mean, she is Black Power all the way. And Tyler Perry, I keep bringing him up because he's like the beacon of hope. He's a man of faith, but he has shown his power through hard work and providing movies that are family oriented and funny, and he's a true inspiration, a true inspiration, who decided to open up his own studio and do his thing, and that's a very powerful story.
Nope. And I know that y'all have got to get ready to go, and me and Dean will get ready to carry it out in the last 15 or 20 minutes and everything. But I will say, one of the things that I really enjoyed and everything was seeing Glenn Close do the butt. So like I said, where they did that EU song, and Glenn Close was like
definitely
the classic of great actresses.
No, she
and
did
everything.
It.
That
yes,
was
she did.
Totally hilarious.
Yes, she does.
So
most
that
definitely
was a totally hilarious moment. So I thoroughly enjoyed that and everything. Dean, this lovely couple has got to get ready to move, so me and you will carry on for a few more minutes. But you have definitely been part of a, in my mind, a power couple as well. So, Dean, if you've got any words that you want to share with this powerful couple before me and you ramble on for a few minutes, I'm sure that they would love to hear it, because, like I said, you and Dr. Diamond are a powerful couple as well, and you might want to share a little bit about your story before they get ready to bounce off.
I'll keep it short and sweet, man. You just have to lift each other up, because there are going to be times when you start feeling down, but the other one will lift you up. Keep each other encouraged. Work out those ideas, come to a compromise, and make it happen, man. And look,
yeah,
very simple. Yeah, exactly. That's the goal. Thank you so much for that.
No problem.
I appreciate you.
You're the best. Thank
all right,
you
guys,
so
it was
much.
Awesome talking. We'll,
thank you.
We
appreciate
we'll keep following you and supporting your social network.
Yes. Thanks so
thank
much,
you
guys. Take care.
Appreciate you.
All right. Have a good one.
No,
yep.
Thank you. Appreciate you. God bless. Bye-bye.
God bless. Bye. So, like I said, you know, I promised you I was going to find somebody if I had to just sit there and dig all day long on LinkedIn. So I said this going to have somebody as a guest today. So, like I said, I was scrounging around, making calls, making everything. But I think that last week I said that we were going to have a guest if I had to sit there and find them. And I, like I said, I was ready to go knock on my neighbor's doors and have them call in and everything. But I said we were going to have a guest, and I thought that was a very interesting couple, and they are definitely trying to do some power broken things over there in the Los Angeles area, you know, one out of restaurant, the other out of medicine and acting. But it definitely sounds like
right,
they are moving in a positive direction and definitely trying to get everybody involved as they are trying to create these powerful reels and things along those lines. So it was good hearing their story and hearing that they were able to be that power couple that we know oftentimes we want to see more of in the world, because we don't hear enough of the stories of those power couples actually, you know, succeeding and doing things together on a regular. So it was good
right,
hearing their voice and hearing the positive news that they wanted to share as well. So I definitely thought that they gave us some good thoughts and some good inspiration, and hopefully folks will go and check out their website and definitely join them and check out what they've got going on and all of that. And by the way, we were talking about before they came on the different things in the news. I understand that there is a possibility, and I guess we're going to learn Wednesday if it's going to happen, that there may be a fourth stimulus bill.
You know what? They just keep on giving you pieces and pieces and pieces of money, and just go ahead and just eliminate the student loans and give everybody a nice little piece of change. You're still sending money and aid to other countries, so you can make it happen.
Yeah, well, apparently Biden is saying that he wants monthly payments for the next 4 years. So families with children under 18 living at home may be eligible for monthly relief of up to $300 per child until the end of 2025 if a rumored proposal from the Biden administration gets through Congress. As reported by the Washington Post and the New York Times, the American Families Plan is expected to extend the expanded child tax credit provided by the administration's $1.9 trillion stimulus package through December of 2025. This could give parents and legal guardians a total of up to $16,200 per child. And there is also talk of this fourth stimulus check as well. So I think that that's even separate from this other thing. But definitely looks like we might be getting some child credits for those of you that have children and everything that are in that, I guess, under 18 category. And it also looks like there may be a fourth stimulus check and everything along those lines. So there might be a fourth stimulus check coming your way.
For people with children.
Reach.
I mean, I don't have any children under the age of 18, so that means we're not getting it.
Yeah, I don't have any children at all. But I had heard rumors that there might actually be another stimulus check that would be not just for those with kids. So like I said, we're going to see what's going on with that, because I don't know. Well, one, I'm not sure that Congress is going to go for that, because while he might be able to get through some of the legislatures, you know, those people that are on the Republican side, they're going to fight no matter what. You know, you tell them that it would go save their kids, and they probably wouldn't care.
Man,
but
man.
Yeah. Oh, and it also says that Biden is about to send $1 billion more in food stamps to some group of people as well. So apparently some more food stamps are coming this way as well. So definitely looks like there are some more financial reliefs coming to different people of different classes and different societies. I think I had also heard that he was getting ready to put some serious taxes on some of the rich as well. So definitely it's going to be interesting to see what goes on in that regard. But it says an estimated 25 million people will get a boost in their food stamp benefits Starting this month, the Biden administration announced this past Thursday, these Americans who are among the lowest income food stamp recipients were left out of a benefit increase last year because of how that past administration implemented their relief package and everything. So basically it sounds like they, you know, did that S word with people, and now Biden's got to do some cleaning up of it.
Yeah, well, it, I don't know what to, you know, because you can say, I say it's all of them, Democrat and Republican, because they have to decide together, or majority has to decide what's going to happen next. You know, so it's interesting. I will say that.
Yep. It is interesting. And one of the checks, I was just on an article, and I don't know what they're talking about. Maybe that's for the ones with the kids. But they were saying some people could get as much as $3,600. So, like I said, that would be interesting. No, I have not seen that. I think the most I saw was maybe $1,400 or something like that. But they're saying some people might be getting $3,600 and all of that. But, you know, it's all got to get passed, and then you got to do the wait and see, and then you got to survive in the meantime while you're waiting and seeing and all of that. So, like I said, you might have just got to do like that couple was doing, the Sotos, and get your hustle on, because who knows when the check will come here and when you're actually going to get it. But, yes, it says that, yep, the 1,400 one-time stimulus checks that were mandated as part of the American Rescue Plan have been going out over the course of the last few weeks, with the latest round delivering about 2 million checks. So I think that was the last one. But there is a movement to push through another payment, possibly through a separate package that would have to pass through Congress. But in the meantime, more checks are on the way for some Americans, also as part of that rescue plan. So it sounds like some people may be getting checks here and checks there, but because I've gotten a couple of them, and I may be out of luck now because I don't have any kids, so I don't think that any of those kid ones will be coming, because it looks like the kids have got to be between the ages of 6 and 17. So definitely grade school, any of the grade schools, are like from what, that 12th grade to first grade? Or yeah, first grade would be 6, because kindergarten would be 5. So it sounds like as long as you've got kids in school, you might be getting some money and all of that. But who knows when we're going to get it or if any more is coming. I'm kind of wondering if this is going to become almost like the way that nonprofits do when they get money, where everybody becomes so dependent on it that they just look for the next check and they don't even think about going out and getting their own hustles or getting back in the job market and things of that nature. So I guess that could be one of the dangers, is that we might have people that become too dependent on it, because we do know that we can become very dependent on free gifts and things of that nature, whether that's from the government, whether that's from parents, whether that's from whoever. So it might be interesting to see if folks actually do some planning, like the Sotos we're talking about, so they could actually be prepared for the next thing that may come their way or not come their way, because otherwise folks will be sitting there going like, hey, wait a minute, I got $1,400 in February, I got $1,400 in, let's say, April or May, and I got another one in August, and they'd be looking for that other $1,400 or $1,500 in November, and the government be looking at them like, we said that we were done. We're not sending you anymore.
You know what? Just go ahead and give every adult $2,000 a month and keep it rocking.
That's not a bad idea, and they have talked about that, and they talked about doing that, and that would be just keep it flat, $2,000 a month until we're totally out of this, which might be another year or two. Or you think that we just need to do this for, like, a decade?
The kids, you use that $2,000 a month to do for your children, and if you're not doing any more than that and you're just waiting on that check, then maybe you don't need to eat so your kids can eat. You know, just my thought. But
yeah, you're right.
Right now, you know, it needs to happen until the pandemic actually ends, whenever that's going to be.
Well, I just saw another article that was going to depress some folks, because, you know, I did see that here in Durham, Bembe is going to be a drive-by event. So it's going to be people can come by in their cars, and I think there's a certain amount of people in the car to hear that classic old-school R&B and some of the other music that they feature, like gospel and things of that nature. But it's going to be like they were doing movies. It's going to be a drive-by festival. And like I said, a number of the other festivals are going either virtual or to smaller venues or to things of that nature. But I did look recently and saw that Bembe, which is a major festival in May, is going to be a drive one. So you have to, like, register your car, tell how many people you're going to be in there. And I'm sure there's limits to that, actually, because they're doing it in shifts. That's right. It's, I think, 4-hour shifts in a 12 to 14-hour festival. So I think it's probably a 12-hour festival. But I know that they're, like, 3 to 4-hour shifts, and you got to pick your shift that you want to go to and hope that you get it, and then park your car there with your people. And I think you can get out of the car as long as you're in that same area, because the cars are supposed to be, you know, that 6 feet apart and all of that. So definitely it's going to be interesting. But it looks like they have already decided that for anybody that was expecting to go up to D.C. and see the fireworks, that ain't happening, because it looks like Biden made a statement that 4th of July parties might not be happening. So it looks like we might not be having 4th of July, at least not in the D.C. area. I mean, I'm sure other people might be doing it, and they might be doing the drive-by version as well. But it does look like we're not going to have any 4th of July celebrations in the D.C. area, if I'm reading this article correctly and everything, because it says Biden suggests 4th of July celebrations might be canceled if people don't get the COVID-19 vaccine. So it sounds like he's saying that not enough people are getting the vaccine, but if they get the vaccine, then we can still have them. Because he suggested that small outdoor gatherings on the 4th of July might have to be canceled if people don't continue to getting the vaccine. So basically, I think he's saying, y'all folks need to keep getting that vaccine. If y'all get the vaccine, we can have a 4th of July party. If y'all don't have it, or I don't see enough of them, then there will be no 4th of July. So he says, to celebrate our independence from this virus on July 4th with family and friends in small groups, we still have more to do in the month of May and June. We all need to mask up until the number of cases go down, until everyone has a chance to get their shot, he said on Wednesday. So that, and back on March 11th, I outlined a vision of what America could look like by the 4th of July, an America that was much closer to normal life than we left behind more than a year ago. However, Biden's March statements on 4th of July parties were slammed by Republicans who argued that the transmission rate of the virus when outdoors is low. And I do know that I think on Wednesday, or maybe tomorrow, he's supposed to be talking about some new mask rules, including saying that we don't have to wear the mask if we're going outside. I don't know about you, Dean, but I've gotten used to this mask, and the mask does seem to be working, so I plan to be wearing that mask even when I go outside, because I'm not sure that the other people might not be following the rules as well. So even if he tells me I don't have to wear it, I got like at least 3 or 4 masks, pick up some others from some of the buses and everything. So I think I'm still going to be wearing the mask.
Me too. Me too.
So you think you're going to wear it as well?
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, they don't know still, so they say, what causes this, how it's spread, all those other things. So it's not, you know, it's better to be cautious than to be careless, you know? So, yeah, I got my mask, man. I'm going to go ahead and keep those on, and hopefully people will start staying alive a little longer and beating this thing, and we'll find out what happens from there. You know, like, we don't know what's going to happen. They're not sure if we're going to need booster shots in the next 6 months. But, you know, we continue to wash our hands. The basic stuff that we were taught growing up, you know, don't stand up under anybody. Give them enough space. And they might not be as dark or as light as you, but good people are good people, so respect that, you know. So I'm keeping my mask on.
Yeah, same here. I'm keeping my mask on as well. So I think that that's going to be the right move, is to keep that mask on and keep ourselves protected any way that we can, because definitely that's just some of the things that are going on. I also saw an article here that apparently the Supreme Court is about to get its nose into something else that it didn't need to have its nose in, because apparently, you know, that former Solicitor General Ken Starr has predicted that a mandated critical race theory curriculum is going to be struck down by the Supreme Court after President Biden's administration established education grant priorities for programs that agree to teach the controversial course load. So apparently the folks that wanted to study race relations and race kind of things along those lines, they're about to knock it down. So Star was saying, we have to scream from the rafters, instead of the race-based curriculum. They can recommend the course, but thank goodness the United States government cannot control. It can influence, to be sure, through its spending powers, because every public school district receives federal funds. I understand that, but to mandate a particular curriculum, I think, will be struck down by the Supreme Court. So definitely looks like folks might be trying to take down some of these courses that were dealing with critical race theory and all of that. So apparently his comments followed a proposed rule from Biden's education department that would prioritize grants for institutions that incorporate racially, ethnically, culturally, and linguistically diverse perspectives in the teaching and learning. Should all learning be that way? So it says the potential rule changes were published Monday, referenced the New York Times, the 1619 Project, a package of essays that argue that chattel slavery defines American foundings, in addition to remarks from scholar Ibrahim X. Zendi and everything of that nature. So I guess folks are getting mad when the truth is being told, and they don't want the truth told. So they're going to go against the truth. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, man.
You try to tell some truth, and folks just don't want to hear the truth. Well, that's just, they just need to get over themselves.
They'll learn, or they'll learn just start accepting truth as it is and not try to spin it your own way, you know.
I did not realize this. I'm sorry. I just got distracted. I did not realize until I was thumbing through my phone and the news things that Maxine Waters is 82 years old. That's about as old as my dad. I did not realize that she was that. I knew she'd been a civil rights activist. I knew she was getting up there, but for some reason I was not thinking 82.
Yep.
And still holding everybody's feet to the fire at 82 as well, because she still don't play. She's like, look, I'm going to tell the truth whether y'all want to deal with it or not. So that's the kind of leaders that we want in Congress, and one that's not going to be kowtowing to folks. She's going to say the truth the way that she sees it and all of that. So I've always had respect for her and continue to have respect, but I sure did not realize that she was 82 and things of that nature. What's going on with your NAACP? Anything major happening in y'all's neck of the woods, or any shout-outs that we got to give to your people? Because I know that a lot of times you got major things happening up there with the NAACP and with your circle of influences and people in that realm. So I was wondering, is anything major jumping up there in New Jersey with your organization?
Not right now. Really, we have a meeting coming up on Thursday, so that's our unit, you know, monthly unit meeting. But with the pandemic, not a lot has been going on. You know, like, we can't really do any, well, we could do service, but right now there's not a lot going on for us to get into, you know. Yeah. So we're just kind of planning for when outside really opens back up, what we plan on doing. What we will have in the upcoming months, we're still going to probably have some events, but they will be, you know, I don't know, we'll be grateful for whoever comes out to support it, because like I said, outside is open, but it's not really open. So we'll see what we get when we have these events starting in, I think, June. Maybe, May. But, you know, we'll try to do something like every month after.
Well, we got a major event that's going on tomorrow that'll be part of a bigger event in May. So the Carolina Theater will have, I think, four musicians recording their portion of the kind of reopening of the Carolina Theater, which is trying to slowly reopen. But there'll be a major fundraiser auction type deal and a virtual event on, I believe it's May 26th. But tomorrow we'll be doing some pre-taping with some of the staff members, some city leaders and other things of that nature. So that's going on tomorrow. And then on Friday started, and I think it's nationwide, but definitely here in the Triangle, started Black Restaurant Week. So Zwelly's, when, you know, Leonardo's been on our show a couple of times, as well as the BU, which you heard me talk about, and a couple of the other Black restaurants, including Dame's Chicken and Waffles, are all being celebrated, including the food trucks and everybody else that's Black-owned. From it started on Friday, and it runs till next Monday. So it runs till Monday, May 2nd. So the next time we're on will be when they conclude it. But definitely a shout-out to the Black restaurants, because, like we said, restaurants have been having a hard hit this whole year and everything, and definitely last year. So they are continuing to be hard hit. So this is an effort for us to show support to them as we celebrate the Black restaurants during Black Restaurant Week. And I believe that that is a national event, but definitely here in the Triangle, that's going on. And I want to say that the Provident 1898 Project is having a business event tomorrow as well. They're going to show people how to get professional headshots and things of that nature, and also encouraging some of our entrepreneurs in an event that they do regularly. I know Justice is the leader of the organization in terms of, like, the day-to-day running of it, even though it's Carl Webb that was the founder of it and all of that. But definitely they are doing that event tomorrow, I think, from 5 until 7 or something like that in downtown Durham. So, like you said, not as many events, but there are a few events, and definitely ways that people are finding to get all involved and to get engaged any way that they can. So it's good seeing people get engaged and definitely seeing folks do some positives in that regard as well. And by the way, I lost a Marquette player to Duke. So like I said, I was shocked this past weekend. It was his senior year, so he actually did his four full years at Marquette and did his full, you know, freshman, sophomore. But he got that extended year, and he took it to go in the transfer portal, and therefore Theo John, who is a very aggressive, if you ever see Marquette play in the last couple of years, he's the guy in the middle that would oftentimes go for those big blocks and everything. After Wojo left, and Wojo is a Duke guy, he probably talked to Wojo, and Wojo talked to Coach K, and Theo John will be spending his bonus year at the Duke campus. So who knows, maybe I'll see Theo around and everything. So he did leave one good program to come to another, but I was hoping he was going to stay there with Shaka Smart and add to the team. But I'm still looking like we're going to have a good team, because I think a couple of the guards are still thinking about staying, even though one has entered the NBA draft lottery, but without an agent, which means if he's not picked high enough, he can come right back to school and everything. And then Shaka himself brought three of his recruits from Texas with him. So he's got some guards that were already coming that would have been going with him to Texas, but since he went to Marquette, they're coming with him to Marquette in Milwaukee. So I still think that the team will be doing all right and everything, but that transfer portal is a trip, because it's like they open it up and then you just see players jumping left and right, going from one team to another, West Coast to East Coast and everything. And I do know that definitely they opened it up and gave them a bonus year if they wanted to take it. And not everybody took it. Some people went straight to the NBA or straight to the international leagues and stuff like that. But they did offer it if folks wanted that bonus year. And so we've got some five-year seniors that were in the transfer portal as well as others. So it's going to be interesting once again to see how sports plays out, both in basketball, because I know the NBA finals are going to come up, and, you know, the Lakers, who would definitely be the solid favorites, are probably going to be the fourth or fifth seed because they've had some serious injuries. But if they come back in order and everything, they would just be a dangerous fourth or fifth seed, and they probably still might win the championship. But I know that they've been dealing with injuries, whether it was Anthony Davis, whether it was LeBron, whether it was a number of others as well. So we'll just have to see how it plays out and everything. I know that it looks like, because they added extra teams, that Golden State might actually make the playoffs this year, because they'll probably be in one of those play-in games and all of that. So they also can be dangerous as well. So, you know, some of these teams have been hurt, then they come together at the end of the season, and you never can tell what that chemistry is going to be like. It could be some deadly chemistry that could get, like, some of those number one and number two seeds an early exit.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be real interesting to see. Has the draft come around? And if the draft has come around, is your team drafted, or is that this coming week? I know that it seems to me that it's coming up, but I can't remember whether we've had the NFL draft or not.
I saw on a commercial, I think was yesterday. The draft is supposed to be coming up. It's supposed to be coming up Thursday.
Okay.
I think Thursday through Saturday.
Okay, so hopefully your Baltimore Ravens will get some new players to replace some of those that they lost, and hopefully my Vikings can find a whole team because they've definitely lost a lot. So hopefully we need to get some a lot of players, but hopefully everybody can improve and be able to do really well and all of that.
Well, you know what? I don't know. You know, I'll wait till after when it's closer to the season because. You know, there's a lot of hype about draft choices and all of that. And then the next thing you know, they don't pan out too well. So,
exactly.
You know, and some people get hyped. This person's coming. Yeah, but football, the average professional career is 3 to 5 years. And then when you get there, you may have been the man in college. But not now. So, you know, anything can happen. Anything can happen.
Oh, yep, and then you're no longer the man anymore.
Nah, you're done. And once that happens, it's over, man. Like, you could have been the man. Look at all of those guys that were, like, hyped. I mean, they hyped them all up. They got into the league, and the league showed them that it's something totally different over here. So go back to where you came from, and good luck, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of good luck, I did want to give a shout-out because, you know, the international broadcast media does have some people associated with India, and India has been going through some tough times, and actually one of the founders is, I think, even in the hospital, but I'm hoping that he's going to recover and everything. But our prayers do go out for India. I know that we definitely have listeners through that Jasavan that are there in India and everything. So, you know, they've been going through some rough times, not getting as much of the vaccine because a lot of the other countries have not done as well as, say, the United States and the United Kingdom, India being one of them, I think Brazil being another one. So our prayers do go out to the people in India and Brazil as they apparently are going through another very difficult period with COVID-19 and things of that nature. And I don't know about you, while I'm very optimistic about the vaccine, I am also cautiously pessimistic as well because I know from history that sometimes vaccines don't always work, or as you put it earlier, sometimes you got to get booster shots, and there's other things that can happen as well, third waves, fifth waves, and a number of other things. So I'm hoping that what India is going through is not something that the United States or other Western countries have to go through, because I was talking to a friend of mine, Shaquille, in Australia, and he was just showing me a copy of his paper where they are now saying because of some of their concerns about the vaccine that they don't want people over 50 to get the vaccine. So they're actually, I think, stopping people from over 50 or discouraging them from getting it and everything. The folks that are, you know, of a different age range, that's cool. But it sounds like over 50s, of which I would be one of them, they don't want them to get it there in Australia. So, and who knows what their facts are versus what our facts are. So I get it, and I'm definitely very hopeful and optimistic for what's going on in America, but I'm also a student of history, so I do know that there have been cases, including that famous pandemic of about 100 years ago, where the folks thought everything was under control, and a second and third wave knocked them even further silly. So hopefully that's not going to happen here, but I do ask people to be diligent and stay diligent in this process as we continue to fight this epidemic and pandemic.
Yes, indeed. And before we get cut off on this thing, we're going get ready to wind it down, man. It's Straight Talk with Dean and Mark, Monday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Don't forget to catch the replays on tomorrow afternoon and Wednesday afternoon on the Skyhawk Radio Network. And if you miss those, we got replays, man, on Radio Public, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Spreaker, TuneIn, Stitcher, Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, Podcast Addict, CastBox, PodFollow, Deezer, Jill Savin, and right here at Blog Talk Radio. We are a part of the Level Podcast Network. You can catch other shows like The Black Girl's Guide to Surviving Menopause, The Chef Gang Radio Show, Funk from the Front Seat, Funk Music with Zach, Learning Unwrapped, Let's K-12 Better, Marketing with Russ, a.k.a. hashtag Russ Selfie, Mona Shake and the Minority Reports, Mullings Music and Memories with Mark Lee, The Online Dinner Party with Mark Lee, The Plant a Good Seed Podcast, The Reinvention Road Trip, Cheese on Call, The Just Podcast, The Mark Lee Show, The Spinning Social Hour, Virginia Interfaith Live, WNC Original Music, and Straight Talk with Dean and Mark. Like I always say, when you walk outside your front door, showtime in the world is your stage. Just make sure that people are not watching the rehearsal. With that being said, this is Six-Man Dean Geronimo. Have an outstanding week. We see y'all in 7 days.
Sounds good, and we'll try to have some more amazing guests as well during that time. So look forward to having some more amazing guests on next Monday, which will be the first Monday in May.
Yes. Yes, and we'll be here. So y'all take care, man. Stay safe. Wash them hands. Wear the mask. And we see y'all.
Yep. Sounds good. Peace, y'all.